Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I want you to know this. Great sex is not about technique. It's about integrating your head, heart, and spirit with your genitals. And here once again to help us sort this out and more is Dr. Nancy Sutton Pierce. She's a relationship and sex author, an international speaker, sensuality educator, and she was last on this program August the 1st. So this is part two. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
Had a little glitch there. How are you?
Good, good. It's really good to have you back. You and I just are in sync on so many things, and I am really excited because you'll be a speaker at Catalyst Con, and Brian and I are coming to that in Los Angeles and looking forward to hearing you speak and getting together away from the conference, too.
So, me too. I'm so excited.
Good. Great. And so tell us about the Catalyst Con. It's and people can check it out. I'll put up the website and your website. Nancy, your website, somebody told me they had trouble reaching it through my description last time. It is drnsp.com?
Yes.
Okay. So your initials, Nancy Sutton Pierce.
Correct.
All right. I don't know why they had trouble. I didn't, but so I'll put up the Catalyst Con website, too, for people if they want to read more about it. But you tell us about it and how your talk will be Sexy Doesn't Have an Expiration Date, and that's what we'll be talking about in this program.
Well, a woman named Dee Dennis has come up with this concept that is really about inspiring exceptional conversation around sexuality. And she, you know, many sexological conferences bring in educators or companies that do make products. But she's really got a blend of not only sexologists and sex educators, but sex workers, lobbyists, activists, researchers. There's writers, sex therapists. I mean, there's the whole gamut of anybody that's working in the field of sexuality and all the and sundry professions that can fall into that category. So she brings them all together to converse. And the educational programs that are offered are so diverse. Really interesting, not your run-of-the-mill sex talks, but really thought-provoking and conversation-stimulating.
And I plan to network and talk to possible future guests for this program.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's quite a rich ground for that, yes.
I think it is. And I think it'll be unique. This will be my first Catalyst Con conference. And have you attended them before, but have you spoken?
No, I have not attended Catalyst Con before. I've attended, SHE and other conferences. This will be my first Catalyst Con.
Yeah. Good. And how many conferences have they had, Catalyst Con?
I believe it's just a few. You know, most of these sexological conferences, I think, are fairly new. You know, there's some that have been going that are asex conferences, but there are newer ones popping up that are just, I think, a little bit more innovative and creating new pathways for us, which is I love. I know that toots my horn.
Of course. And I know from my experience with you on this program that you'll be an excellent speaker. It's a wonderful title, Sexy Doesn't Have an Expiration Date. How do we define sexy? How do people define sexy typically?
I think most of the time when people are trying to conceptualize it, they think of a look, an appearance of sexy. And it's oftentimes youth-oriented. It's oftentimes how we dress or how a person dresses or presents themselves. So, we have kind of a lot of superficial ideals about what is mm-hmm. sexy. Mm-hmm. And my role in working with women is to take it to a whole new level.
Mm-hmm.
So that women start to get the fact that it has nothing to do with what they look like.
Absolutely. And when we get to the part of the interview, the myth busting, we'll elaborate mm-hmm. on that a little more, because so many women feel less than as they age and not so sexy. But we'll get into that. But why is sexy even more important these days?
Sexy is an energy.
Yes, it is.
And when I've studied Tantra and I've been a yoga student and teacher for over 23 or 24 years now, and when you study energetic mm-hmm. movement and energetic concepts, you realize that our sex energy is a life force. And when we're depressed or defeating ourselves, those are the times that we have no concept. We don't want to have sex at all. We're not feeling sexual. We're not feeling creative. And it's hard to know sometimes which comes first, you know, the loss of sexy feeling, or does the depression come first? And I think a lot of times depression hits women more and post children. So I'm also
or menopause,
right? I was going to kind of add that because
yes, of course,
hormones. You know, we are driven by hormones. So
we are.
As a registered nurse, and I was a diabetes nurse specialist for years. So I dealt with all endocrine issues,
mm-hmm.
and when you start to really appreciate the power of hormones in our body
mm-hmm.
and what they drive. You realize that when a hormone runs amok, it has a massive effect on how we feel. So it's a barometer. You know, you're feeling sexy. That's a barometer of a lot of health measurements.
Yes.
And life satisfaction.
Diabetes is the most common cause of male impotence, and I find this really interesting. 80% of diabetic women do not lose their sexual desire or ability to orgasm. And in The Fountain of Age, which was published more than 10 years ago, Betty Friedan wonders if a possible explanation for this disparity might be simply that male sexuality is equated with erectile capacity and not with total sexual responsiveness, which remains unimpaired in female diabetics. And so we'll probably get into this as we go here today, Dr. Nancy, but so wondering if you moved the focus of male sexuality from a preoccupation with the erection to a more all-over sexuality, then diabetic men wouldn't remain sexual. They would
exactly.
remain more sexual the way their female sexual counterparts do.
Right, right. We've tried to simplify and dumb down what is sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've gone from, okay, sexuality is female wetness and orgasm and male erection and
mm-hmm.
orgasm. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's so simplified, and mm-hmm. it's not accurate. So when we do mm-hmm. these measurements, because you know, diabetes affects your blood vessels, it also affects your nerves.
Yeah.
And so for anybody that has coronary artery disease, they're going to have impaired circulation, which definitely would impact an erection.
Mm-hmm.
But people that get neuropathies where the nerves are damaged, that can impact sensation. So mm-hmm. that can change how your body responds to touch. But as you and I both know, so much of sexuality is happening between your ears.
Yes,
not your legs.
Indeed.
And so we give up a lot of potential pleasure by believing these myths that, well, if you can't get an erection, you can't be sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you can't have an orgasm, you can't be sexual.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, one doesn't exclude the other. So that's what
absolutely.
We work on. Huh?
Yeah. Now, you're also going to be talking at the Catalyst Con, in your topic, again, the title is Sexy Doesn't Have an Expiration Date. You're going to be talking about this, wondering if being sexy fits into the stereotype of an objectified woman. Would you talk about that, Dr. Nancy?
When a woman appears sexy or has a sexual confidence, they're still stereotyped and judged. And an example of that, I just saw this morning, Melania Trump wore high heels onto the plane going to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And the barrage of insults, horrific slut-shaming insults that have been put on this poor woman for wearing mm-hmm. her high heels from the White House to the plane, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She looked magnificent. You know, she had slacks on. She looked cute, confident, sexy. And people see that and just go right into calling her a whore and a slut and these horrible names. And so we still have this myth around,
mm-hmm.
well,
mm-hmm.
if I feel sexy, if I look sexy, am I going to be a slut? Am I going to be slut-shamed? So
yes.
There's a resistance, there's a hesitation that a lot of women have for fear of being judged.
And, of course, as we get older and more mature, we're often more sexually confident, and we can say more what we need and want, and so that slut shaming is not going to be taken so personally because we have more confidence. But it is unfortunate because she's a former model. She's used to wearing high heels. She is beautiful.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of people don't like her husband, so she probably gets some residue from that.
Which is ridiculous, isn't it? Let's judge her shoes because she's married to whoever she's married to.
Yeah, right.
It's a stretch to find a reason to hate on her, but people
mm-hmm.
sure do. And going after her shoes when they should be worried about the people in Houston. You know,
absolutely, yes. We are worried about that. This is a horrible thing that Houston has experienced.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's an uphill battle to help women
mm-hmm.
step into their goddess selves and
mm-hmm.
express themselves freely. And women, sadly, are the worst at the slut shaming.
Women slut shaming other women. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we have to become more conscious of that. I think rather than shame the person that's being shaming, we have to be compassionate and say, clearly you're not understanding what you're doing. I know we have this rhetoric, we have these beliefs, and we believe that it's true that if you do this, you're that.
Mm-hmm.
But what is that saying about you as a woman?
Mm.
You know, what is that saying about how we're supporting each other and trying to lift each other up? You know, tear each other down. We have enough people out there that are going to do that. We don't need to do it to each other.
Amen.
Yeah. So I'm a big teacher of, when you see a woman that's looking hot, by God, tell her, you look amazing. You go,
yeah,
girl.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel the same way. And conversely, when I get, even as an older woman, when I get a compliment from another woman about how I look or whatever, I'm always very grateful, because unless she's a lesbian, and I don't, and this is apart from that, it's usually a compliment without any sexual overtones, just
right.
A compliment. And
hey, I figure if a lesbian compliments me, that's highest praise, because they're always
good,
like
point.
Women. So that's like, yeah, okay, thank you. I'm not a lesbian, but hey, that's cool. Thank you.
That's very cool. You're
I
also going
to be nice
talk
to each other.
Yes. You're also going to speak about what happens to us when we don't feel sexy. You alluded already to depression, and of course that can occur, and what comes first. I mean, a lot of people take an antidepressant and their libidos are shot. When we don't feel sexy, since good sex is really important for health, for good health, our health may suffer.
Well, you know, back in the 1800s and
yes.
in the early 1900s, women go to the doctor with these same symptoms. They would be grumpy. They couldn't sleep. They were irritable.
Mm-hmm.
They were crying all the time. They were depressed. They were unmotivated. The whole list. They would go to their doctor. They'd be diagnosed with hysteria.
Hysteria.
And they would be masturbated to orgasm.
Right, right.
By the doctor. But thank
what
you, doctor.
What a cure.
My
what an amazing cure. Suddenly they felt really good.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a line of women out the doctor's door, but they did that for years. The doctors were the ones that invented the vibrator.
Right.
And they got tired. You know, so we understood this in the late 1800s, and we don't understand it now.
What's happened, do you think?
I think puritanical beliefs and
yes.
religion has had a huge impact
mm-hmm.
on our whole belief model around sexuality. We've made it something to fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my husband's a physician, and I tell him, when women come in saying they're depressed, prescribe orgasms.
Exactly.
You know, prescribe masturbation.
Exactly.
Prescribe maybe getting a new partner. You know, I mean, something.
Yes.
Because they need something more than what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Not a medicine that's going to make their libido or their ability to have an orgasm even more difficult.
Yeah, and a vibrator can really can work. When I was at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center, it was a pretty good theory with some research behind it, not a lot, but that women who did not masturbate as teenagers probably had not laid down the neural pathways from the genitals to the brain. And so they almost always, in order to reach orgasm, they almost always needed a vibrator, which goes much faster, much, much faster
right.
than any finger or penis or tongue.
Right.
Can go.
Right.
And
the magic wand.
The magic wand, yes.
Yep.
And there is a sex toy called that, right?
Yep, it's the best one.
Do you think so?
So far.
Magic wand. Yeah. Well, we have, when we don't feel sexy, we're often going to slide into depression, and then we don't have the benefits of orgasm. With orgasm, the body produces so much oxytocin, so much
mm-hmm.
more oxytocin and dopamine, and it can feel like after an orgasm or even orgasms, it can feel like kind of a floating in an oxytocin dopamine soup. Floating. I think that sex and orgasm is as close as many of us get to transcendence.
I think so. I mean, because when you think about it, in that orgasm state,
mm-hmm.
you're really not thinking. There's really no thinking happening in that moment. It's all
right.
about it's just being in that way, being in that on that in that in those. You know, you're not processing thoughts.
Well, and in fact, the amygdala, the feeling center of the brain, the fear center of the brain, needs to take a nap, and some for orgasm to occur. And a lot of women don't know how to turn that off and surrender. And that combined with, for many women, the physical connection becomes mechanical and predictable. The relationship maybe feels distant. Many women feel undesirable and empty. Mm-hmm. And some will start to look for that high elsewhere.
Yes.
Maybe through an affair. And that, well, I see that a lot in my practice. It isn't just the man who has the affair, it's the woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, like we started off with, you know, sex energy is life energy.
Yes.
And when you feel like your life energy is being drained or shut off,
mm-hmm.
there are mechanisms that kick in that are really survival mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when your life feels like it has no vibrancy and no meaning and no joy,
mm-hmm.
You kind of wonder what it's all about.
Yes. And combined with that, I sometimes I see couples where, oh, the woman will say in the first session, I don't really want to work on sex. You know, isn't it just supposed to happen naturally? And as Dr. David Snarch says, sex is not a natural function. It's a natural potential. And it has to be developed like reading, speaking a language, or spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be developed.
Right.
And that's why older people often have better sex, right?
Right. Yeah. More practice makes perfect.
Yes, it does. So,
the work I did in China, where, you know, obviously they're capable of having lots of sex because they've made lots of babies.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's enjoying it.
Mm.
Nobody is enjoying it. not the men, not the women, because it's just a function. So
it's just a function, yes. And,
just a function.
And that is a shame.
It is.
And that's also, and then that encourages boredom to set in.
Uh-huh.
And avoidance ultimately to having sex at all. So I want to begin to talk about your myth busting that you plan to address in your talk at Catalyst Con. Sexy doesn't have an expiration date. And the first myth that you're going to look at, perhaps, is sexy is a look or size.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you speak more about that?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to people about, you know, somebody looks sexy. Well, they look pretty, but sexy is a feeling. Sexy
mm-hmm.
is a look out the eyes and the mouth and the body language, and because it's coming from an energetic feeling. You can look current, you can look sharp, you can look pretty, you can look that way, but sexy is really has to be a feeling, because somebody could be dressed to the nines and not feeling sexy, and they're not going to look sexy.
That's true.
Because it's how you move, it's how you carry yourself, it's how you engage with people, it's your inner confidence and you're knowing that you got this. And and I've learned so much about this through African American women.
Oh, say more. That's very interesting.
I do these retreats, and mm-hmm. probably 70% of my guest list are African American women.
Hmm.
And I watch these women of all sizes and shapes, some very large women.
Yes.
Absolutely the sexiest women on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They own their bodies, no matter mm-hmm. what body they're in. They own it. They love it. They're sexy. They're attractive. Men flock to them. They don't lack any confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it has taught. And then I see these, you know, other ethnic groups that are maybe more of the ideal American body image that the mm-hmm. media wants us to believe is sexy and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they're miserable. They're uncomfortable in their skin. They're not confident. They don't feel sexy. They're,
mm-hmm.
they're depreciating themselves constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to look at these contrasts and go, wow, so this really has nothing to do with what's on the outside. This is all about how you're feeling.
Yes, that's fascinating. I remember reading some years ago that fashion photographers often had to ply the models with a lot of alcohol in
uh-huh.
order to get them to relax and try to look sexy. But a lot of these very thin, very tall women had trouble with their sexuality. Over the years, I've had one or two in my practice because they're not in their bodies, and they're so concerned with how they look, what position they're in when they're having sex, but their sexuality is kind of superficial.
Yeah, it's really not even sexuality. It's marketability.
Oh, yes.
Because these women also are so afraid that they're going to lose that marketability and that from
mm-hmm.
their look,
mm-hmm.
there's a very high suicide rate.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the pressure that they have for work
mm-hmm.
to look a certain way, to be a certain size, the eating disorders and the drug use
yes.
is rampant.
Yes.
Because they're miserable. And they
yeah.
feeling sexy is the last thing on their list.
Of course. Of
yeah.
course.
They're so really it's marketability. But
yeah.
that's held up to us as a culture as the ideal beauty or
mm-hmm.
sexy. And because it's a mirage. And
yeah.
then when we look in the mirror and we don't look like that, we think, well, how could I be sexy? I might feel sexy, but how could I be sexy? Well, I guess I'm not sexy. And we talk ourselves out of it. Even
mm-hmm.
if we have the energy, we just kind of cut our own feet out from underneath us. So that's my favorite work is to help people do
yes, and
that.
And preteen girls and teenage girls are really vulnerable because they'll look at magazines that are airbrushed and then
mm-hmm.
And especially if they have a mother who has either borderline eating disorder or a full-fledged one, and then they can just get into an eating disorder so easily because they and I read one study where diets will start as early as 10 years of age for some of these girls.
Yeah.
And so they hurt their health.
Ruins them. I mean, they really do feel like they're broken at that very, you know, especially, I mean, most little girls go through a little chubby phase before they
oh,
start
that's
their period.
Right.
You
yeah.
know, that you have to have body fat to make, you know, to make estrogen. So,
oh,
you
that's
know,
right. And that's, and you know this as a nurse, that's one reason that anorexics often stop menstruating.
Uh-huh. And athletes.
And, oh,
you know,
and athletes,
women,
too, yes.
women who are athletes, they have such a low body fat. Mm-hmm. Even if they might have great muscle mass, but their body fat's so low that they stop ovulating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they put their health is at risk with this sort of thing.
It can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you also have a myth, and this really is a common one. You can't be sexy and over 50.
Yeah, it's like that's where you start to see, like, you kind of look around on yourself for that little expiration date stamp.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think, you know, that certainly comes from our youth-oriented culture, where we have, you know, we're all struggling to stay young and look mm-hmm. young. And I was talking to my youngest daughter, who's 35, mm-hmm. about this recently, and I said, what do you think it is? And she said, well, because the idea of aging is that you're getting close to death. And I went, okay.
Sounds like you have a wise and intuitive daughter.
I do. She's actually a college professor. So she teaches mm-hmm. all about, you know, communications and gender
yeah,
and all
great.
Those fun things. But yeah. So I thought that was an interesting, okay, well, I mean, I guess if we think that age and death, and we're definitely a death-fearing culture, you know, if we're equating those, so perhaps we need to recognize that the second half of your life, between 50 and 100, because our lifespan is doubled in the last 100 years
yes.
or more, and so maybe we can start extending that, you know, that maybe mm-hmm. maybe we can move it to like actually when you die, then you're no longer sexy. Okay.
Right. But by remaining sexual, you're much more likely to extend your life.
Oh,
and,
my gosh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so good for your health.
Well, don't you find that people that are having this great sex
mm-hmm.
don't look their age? I mean, they just stay you more youthful appearing and acting
mm-hmm.
and feeling, and the sparks there in the eyes and the just their dynamics are much
yes.
different.
It's clear that a woman like that, like you, like me too, that we haven't folded up our tents.
Right.
And I think love and good sex are the best rejuvenators. I think better than any facelift.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not a proponent of a lot of plastic surgery.
Right,
If something's really bugging you and you get it done and it's subtle and it makes you feel better, I mean, chances are nobody else is going to notice it.
Right.
But that's fine if it's just for you and you feel better. Okay, whatever. But wow, I mean, you see some of the. I sat in Beverly Hills in a sidewalk cafe one afternoon a couple of years ago,
and you see a parade of tight-faced women.
Well, you know, I think these people probably look okay on camera, but in mm-hmm. person, they looked more like monsters.
Mm.
They were so distorted, and the lips didn't go with the face, and the
mm-hmm.
face, the skin just didn't look like normal skin, and it was just fascinating how, and that's the culture of beauty in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And the extensive expense and risk that people put themselves through in the name of wanting to look younger or better or somehow different, that
mm-hmm.
that's going to bring them happiness and energy and vibration, and then they see it doesn't, so they have to get something else done.
And it's an endless and expensive pursuit
uh-huh.
of looking young.
I had a friend die recently, She had went in for a tummy tuck.
And
died under anesthesia. Had a reaction. So it is risk-free.
Seems like an unnecessary loss.
Truly.
And there, of course, are other documented instances of people getting plastic surgery where they die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if people, you know, I don't know what people hear when they get there, when they go in for their surgical prep, but
mm-hmm.
there's no such thing as risk-free surgery.
Yes. Yeah. Such a good point. So let's get to the next myth that you like to bust.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of tied in with this one we've been talking about. You can't be sexy and a grandmother. You're a grandmother. I'm a grandmother. I think you do, and I certainly feel like a very sexual woman. And because I'm sexual and having so much fun with it, you know what? I can be happier and more playful with my grandchildren.
That's so true.
Because
so true.
I just now made this connection. But you know, I'm playful with sex, and so it carries over. I can relax and be playful with my grandchildren.
You know, to have great sex, you have to be able to be present.
Right.
And you have to be, like you used the word surrender, which I love that word.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You have to be able to surrender to the fullness of the experience that you're receiving and giving.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you have to be right there in that moment, present and accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
And when you learn to do that, that can translate into every experience that you have, whether you're eating a meal or playing on the floor with your grandchild or listening to music or walking on a river, you know. I mean, there's just it enhances every part of your life because it teaches you that valuable lesson.
Yes. To be present.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience with my clients, a lot of women have trouble being present.
Yes.
Just truly present. And, yeah, I like the word, too, surrender. There's this idea that it's really natural, and this is another of your myths that you will bust, it's natural to lose interest in being sexy as you age.
Uh-huh.
And that simply is not true for many. And I think it has to do with attitude. Sometimes men will avoid sex because they're experiencing erectile dysfunction. And
right.
And we know about that.
Mm-hmm. And women will avoid it if they're having pain.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, pain is probably one of the biggest issues I think women have as they move towards menopause because they don't understand, you know, the need for more lubrication or hormone
mm-hmm.
balancing or all, you know, just prep time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you found that as couples, you know, a lot of couples, as they've been together for a long time, they develop a sex routine.
Right.
And it usually gets shorter and shorter and shorter and just to fit it in, you know. And so there's less and less attention paid to warming each other up and having the play time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, let's just get down to business and get this over with.
Exactly.
And men have a harder time getting an erection under those circumstances, and women have a harder time lubricating. So it's a lose-lose proposition for both people.
It really is. I think it's important to remove the belief that sex is intercourse. And because women do have pain with intercourse until they maybe vagifem or some other medical interventions can help, but the relationship is so important too. And yeah. So all, and with men in particular, non-erect penises become non-problematic if they, and that's actually one reason I ask my clients to actually, they'll say sex and they mean intercourse, but I'll get them to use the word intercourse rather than sex to mean it. Because there's so much more that we can do, sexually speaking, without mm-hmm. intercourse.
Right. I think Bill Clinton tried to change, you know, he wanted it to just to be intercourse.
mm-hmm.
So he confused people about what is sexual. And you know, we have a lot of beliefs around virginity and how, you know, the importance of virginity. And I'm sure you've counseled all these young couples that are doing everything but vagina sex.
Yeah.
And they think they're not having sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's especially true for women who present with vaginismus, where penile penetration isn't possible because the entrance to the vagina is contracting so much.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, once a woman overcomes this, usually with talk therapy, seeing a doctor, and also physical therapy having to do with pelvic floor, so then she can overcome this. In the meantime, the couple has actually built up a repertoire of non-penetrative sexual activity, and they may have a richer sex life because of it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great tool that I give a lot of couples is, you know, I have one client who gets urinary tract infections
uh-huh.
almost every time they have intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just weren't doing anything. And I just said, oh, my gosh, you're missing out on all the good stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So take intercourse off the table for a while. That's not, you can't have it. So I want you to do everything else that's comfortable and fun for you.
Right.
And explore and find new, you might find the back of your knee is your hot zone, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
Explore the entire body. It's all there for you to play with. You know, quit thinking that's the only thing you can do with each other that's going to be pleasurable.
I like that. I like what you just said. It's all there for you to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Masters and Johnson, with their years of research, sexual research, they coined the word sensate focus, and they wanted, and so the sensate focus touch caressing exercises that I give to my clients really has to do with the idea that you need to be less genitally focused, which is what Masters and Johnson thought.
Right.
That there are all these possibilities from the top of our head to the bottom of our feet.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And a lot of people are missing that because they, and there are some men that go right for the genitals.
Right.
You know, and a woman needs the sexual buildup, a woman really needs it. I mean, her uterus lifts up and away from the top of the cervix when she's really aroused, and if that hasn't happened, then she'll experience pain with the penis hitting the cervix and then the uterus
right.
if it hasn't lifted up and away, right?
Right.
Dr.
Exactly.
Nancy, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And that's, you know, so there, with vaginismus, any of painful sex, almost always it comes down to learning how to please each other in a way that is before intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the couples that are trying to save that virginity probably do end up being a lot more creative.
Mm-hmm. Yes, often they do. So we want to encourage our clients to do a slow build up involving erogenous zones, and that can be the back of her neck, her inner thighs, her arms, and that can really warm her up. And if men are microwaves, women are slow cooking ovens.
Right.
That's often true, isn't it?
And also, I think as men mature, they become more of a slow cooker too. I think
there would be
a lot less need for Viagra if women understood male anatomy and male physiology and the aging male.
Yep.
To understand that he needs time to warm up too. He's, you know, he's not 20 and can't get an erection without even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And men, especially professional men or busy men that have a lot going on in their head, they have to be able to get out of their big heads too,
as
do women. And so taking time to shift gears and get into the body so the body can experience the pleasure, that's, we both need that. And, you know, so women learning that I had one woman just completely devastated because her husband couldn't get an erection as like he used to. And she took it personally.
Mm-hmm.
She thought it was really a reflection on her.
Right.
And so I had to educate her about men's bodies. This is a very natural thing. And so he needs what you need. Just
mm-hmm.
give him what you need and see what happens.
And giving yourself more time to have sex.
Right, right.
And other things that can help include patience, communication between the partners, and sometimes appropriate use of sexuality-enhancing drugs.
Right.
As well
right.
as some basic knowledge. I'm surprised when I hear about a man who is using Viagra or Cialis or one of the other PDE5 inhibitors, Levitra, that I'll say, well, did your urologist explain to you that you need to take this on a relatively empty stomach and you need to have, you need to like your partner and you need to have some stimulation, penile stimulation with hand or mouth. And if a man takes Viagra on a full stomach, then too much of his blood is busy digesting food and not going to the genitals. So that
right.
can be important. But a lot of urologists don't spend the time explaining what's necessary to go along with the erection enhancing drug, right?
Because they're not comfortable talking about any of those sexual things.
Yeah,
they haven't been trained to talk about sex at all.
I know.
And, you know, most marriage family counselors haven't been trained to talk about sex. So. And we know that most couples' issues are around sex or money, which is usually just communication. But
right,
if you can't talk about one of the most basic human needs, you're going to be missing out on a lot of potential healing for your patients or clients. And so, you know, through my education, my husband has definitely become a much better physician in terms of dealing with sexual issues and being more comfortable himself talking about sexuality and helping educate his patients. So
I'm sure. And
but he wasn't trained to do that, and
no,
there's so many laws that make him afraid to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's been your influence.
Mm-hmm.
You have a very interesting question that you ask, and that is, what advice would we give our much younger self? And I thought about this and quite a lot, actually. And one of the things is, I would want to change My goal, this would be advice to my younger self, from getting someone to love me to becoming someone capable of loving. And I have I have done that.
Wow.
You know, that's important, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah, huge.
Yeah, and then, and the other thing that, you know, the old idea was the closer the better, but that's not always true. If you're married to your best friend, at times it can not be so exciting because you're so close that there's no breathing space to feel attractive or attracted.
Mm-hmm.
Let there be spaces in your togetherness. I think that can be important too. And so what advice would you give your younger self?
I think what I would tell my younger self is mm-hmm. that there are no limits to what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Let go of your fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was afraid a lot and actually pretty shy as a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
And got married very young.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first husband and my trainer husband, I call him. And didn't know that I had options.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that I could have done some amazing things without having to have a boy in my life or a man in my life.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of young women don't really know that. They're sequential monogamers. They go from boyfriend to boyfriend or husband to husband. And I did that. And I,
mm-hmm.
it was only when I allowed myself about a 10-year span to be single, that I grew into myself.
Yes. So I think we probably both like Esther Perel,
Love
the author
her.
Of Mating
yes.
in Captivity, and she says eroticism awesome. Requires maintaining your sense of separateness, not always doing everything together, and understanding that the central agent of eroticism is the imagination. You
right.
must be willing to take risks, to play. You can't be pragmatic with eroticism. It's about going into the bedroom at 11. It's not about going into the bedroom at 11 p.m. and checking off the last item on your to-do list. It means going inside yourself to a place where you're completely free, nutty, frivolous, and alive.
Oh,
I like that a lot.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great.
Yes.
Beautiful. I love how she strings words together.
Yeah, and the fact that English isn't even her first language, it's just amazing.
Right.
You know, she speaks seven-plus languages.
Wow.
And does therapy in many of them in New York City. So mm-hmm. I've heard her speak a couple of different times, and in person she's also very impressive. Anyway, we've had another wonderful conversation about sexuality and aging, and there's no expiration. And I'm glad that we've had this discussion because I think a lot of people need to hear about this. You know, I married later than you did. I married at 30. So I had my 20s to travel the world and have a number of different sexual experiences, which actually informed my sexuality, especially when I was away, far away from home, and I could experiment a little bit. But I'm a gerontologist because of the studies I did on aging and sexuality in the early 90s with Dr. Walter Bortz, an MD, and they were published in medical journals. So I've had the hope for a long time, and it's informed my life that with any luck and a modicum of health and a willingness to remain open to its potential, that the deliciousness of sexual intimacy can continue right to the end.
I believe that. Yeah, I do too.
I know you do.
And I think our belief in it will make it so.
Yes.
You know, the mind is such a powerful, powerful beast. And when we believe in that, that's why I talk to people a lot about what their beliefs are, because their beliefs frame their reality.
Mm-hmm.
And if we believe that you're supposed to get sick and asexual and as you age, then that's exactly what we're going to experience.
And because we do move toward what we visualize.
Absolutely.
I guess that's sort of a Buddhist idea.
Well, so, when I think of myself, I don't think of myself as whatever age I am. I mean, I just kind of don't think of myself as an age. I don't relate to the age. So I'm still so curious about this world, and so with that kind of a childlike curiosity, I move forward and I don't worry about the age. So I'm excited to celebrate this decade.
And you have a new one coming up, don't you?
Yes, ma'am.
And that's great.
I do.
And I look forward to, Brian, my fiancé, and I look forward to celebrating that with you. It'll be great fun after Catalyst Con is through.
And that's September 16th is the day I'll be speaking. So
yes.
Hopefully anybody that's listening that's in the L.A. area will come on by and listen and catch all the other great conferences that are happening.
So we have about 2 minutes. Can you say how all of this fits with the exotic lifestyle retreats that are offered in Jamaica at Hedonism?
My audience is primarily women,
and the men
who really adore women. And so all of my events speak to the goddess and provide tools and education and experiences for women to freely come into their own sexuality. There's lots of opportunity for experiencing things and exposure to things and learning and meeting other people that are like-minded or have already walked that walk. So it's all about being free.
So, Nancy, that's the music, which means we have to end. Thank you so much for another wonderful program. We'll talk more later. Goodbye, everybody.
All right.